And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Thursday, almost at the end of the month. Labor Day weekend right around the corner, and the weather looks pretty good for it for most of us. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, alongside Meteorologist Justin Storm and our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. Had a little bit of a little rain up in the Northern Valley this morning, Justin.
Took my canoe out this morning, Dean.
Did your sump pump keep up?
My sump pump is doing just fine.
Good. Yeah, 2 to 4 inches, and locally even more up in Polk and Grand Forks County. So quite a bit of rain in the Northern Valley. Severe weather last night out to our west around Steele. They saw some tornadic activity. We saw some severe weather south of Bismarck. I posted some pictures on our Facebook page. As I believe it was St. Liberty, if I'm not mistaken. This one was down in South Dakota, northern South Dakota, where farmer was harvesting, and you could see just a developing tornado in the background while he's harvesting. So on just some crazy weather and even some severe weather up around Grand Forks with winds 70-plus miles an hour, did a little damage up there along with the with the flooding rain. So we escaped it here in the FM area and point southward for the most part. It was, although there were reports of some heavy rain around the FM area, about a quarter to half inch. And then out to our west, it was a little bit more, 1 to 3 inches common from Jamestown through Valley City, even into areas of western Cass County, and then that target of 2 to 4 inches up in the Northern Valley. So, nice soaking of rain. Some areas don't need it, but, well, you're not going to argue with Mother Nature. She's going to dump it where she wants to dump it. And now severe weather is going to occur more than likely today just south of Lakes Country. I'd say from Alex southward, where temperatures are already in the 80s, while most of the rest of us are in the low to mid-70s as a cool front is about ready to press through the area. So that's all good news, because that will lead to a much nicer looking holiday weekend, and we'll have more on that coming up a little bit later.
Right on, right on. Yeah, last night was fun to hear the thunder and the wind ripping, and we were getting some, for some odd reason, some non-thunderstorm wind gusts upwards of 55 miles an hour, 55, 60 here, say from Polk Trail, Grand Forks County, and over towards Devil's Lake. Outside of the storms, we were getting some very, very strong winds before they even rolled into the area.
And Bridget is traveling back from Iowa, and
boom.
I think she's going to outrun the storms, if I'm not mistaken. Where are you at right now, Bridget?
I think that's actually the case. So really not that far from Sox Center, just went by Avon, Minnesota. So right now, I think I'm going to make it ahead of any more storms. Did hear a lot of, as you guys said, localized reports of heavy rainfall, particularly in that Hatton area. Chad, one of our listeners, who's also a farm manager in that region, said their farm saw anywhere from 1.2 inches to just over 4. A lot of heavy wind, some tree damage, and so forth. So probably some structural damage to go along with it. So far, no one has called to let me know that they have had hail or anything like that on their crop. But it certainly is going to make for some frustration as we try to wrap up wheat harvest across the region.
Right. And, well, they did receive quite a bit of hail out around the Bismarck area. In fact,
you shared a photo today.
I did.
Of some big old hailstones ripping through a house siding and windows, and they were all just gone.
Yeah.
You wish that was your house.
Well, I was, you know, just over my house. I need new siding, new roof. So that would have been good timing. But unfortunately, or fortunately, whatever way you look at it, yeah, that's, that didn't happen. But boy, they got pounded out around Bismarck. In fact, golf ball or larger size hail occurred out there. So that's enough to do quite a bit of damage. And yeah, I shared those pictures if you want to log on to, WDAYRadioNow.com. There's an article posted on there showing those pictures at areas that got just absolutely hit. And I can only imagine if that went over some of the fields out there, that had to strip corn. I mean, this stuff, if it just shattered this siding of this house, and that was south of Bismarck. So I can only imagine any crops out there had to be just inundated with damage to any corn crops from that hail.
Some people are looking forward to a good hail out.
Yeah, that's possible.
Are fields, right? There are some that aren't awesome, and folks would say, you know, they've got a field that's maybe looking for hail. That's not an excellent solution, because we know that even if you are insured, it's certainly not going to be perfect, right? You don't make money on the insurance on your vehicle in that situation. The same can be said about your crop. So realistically, it's not what we want to see, but in some situations, that crop was maybe a little lower quality to begin with. We've had some reports of that, whether it's in wheat or barley, even a few cornfields that just aren't as awesome as one would have hoped for this time of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, hopefully we can keep things nice and dry for a while, dry things out, get ready for more harvest to come, and that this rain kind of finishes off whatever needs it fairly well. Bridget, is there anything out there that could really, I don't know, benefit from a late August, early September rain besides just having the ground soft for beets?
Soybeans. Soybeans are going to appreciate that, because you're going to continue to see those pods still and finish out that crop right now. So I wouldn't discount that for the soybean crop at this point.
Right on, right on.
Yeah, and according to the LRC, there's a couple of storms coming in, notable storms. One looks to be right around the 10th, right around the start of Big Iron. That doesn't look to be the main one, but somewhere between the 17th and the 22nd. And we've been talking about this, and let's see how accurate the LRC is, because somewhere in that 17th through the 22nd time frame, a notable rain will encompass much of the northern and even into the central plains as well. So is that too late, Bridget, for a healthy rain as we go into that third week in September, or is that still going to help the beans?
No, at that point, we're already focused on harvest. We're looking for that crop to be ready to go downstream, you know, go down through harvest and move on through the food chain, you might say. But I'm curious, you know, as you said, if we're looking at a storm that third week of September, we still don't have a storm track for that, nor would we be able to say the amount of precipitation. So there may be a storm system, and even though it may be significant, it may not drop an awful lot of rainfall, because there were a number of pictures posted last night that said we had thunder and lightning, but we didn't get much for rainfall, even with some of those areas of heavy hail or heavy rain.
Good point, yeah.
With the convective ones, it's more difficult to do that just due to the sporadic nature of where those downpours are at. But if it's a uniform stratiform rain, those are a little bit better at understanding path and general amounts.
Yeah, and that's...
And that's also the time frame you guys have talked about a potential frost. So there could be a lot of things happening at one time.
Boy, yeah, that's
did we mention? Did we mention that?
We had frost. I think the LRC had the frost in the right after the first week of October, like October 7th through the 10th, I believe, for much of the northern plains.
I thought it was going to hold off until October.
Yeah,
I'm holding out for November 1st, so that's what I'd really like to see.
That I don't think you're saying. Yeah,
good
that.
Luck.
Yeah, you're wow. Yeah, don't lay any money with a bookie on that. We want you to keep your house.
Right. I'll have to try to remember to lay off the bedding for the time frame. Got it.
Indeed. Okay. Well, hey, if you want to be a part of the conversation today, you got some rainfall amounts, storm damage, you can call the program and talk to us about it. Or if you'd rather just talk about a different topic or add into the conversation, call us on the Red Wing Shoe line. That's is the number to the studio today, 701-293-9000. Or you can send those questions, comments, topics, photos, and reports to weatheroregg@flagfamily.com. Coming up on the program today, we got a few topics that we're going to run down, and one of those is body condition scores on cattle, as well as heat and water deprivation in livestock. And Bridget's got an update on the Farm Progress Show that we'll be hitting at throughout this course of the day. Our guest that's going to be joining us here in a little bit, that's Philip, is it Panek, Bridget? Panek? From Western New York?
Yes, he is. So Philip farms out in that region, and I've met Philip through Twitter. They have corn and soybeans, but additionally they raise sweet corn, green beans, and a few other crops, and it's just probably different than what most of us would envision. Their farm, well, they need to cross the Erie Canal from time to time and to be able to get to fields. So I think just the geography in itself versus what we see here will be a fairly interesting discussion with Philip when he's able to join us here coming up shortly.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, why don't we hit on since you're on the road, you're leaving Farm Progress, why don't you give us a final update on what was going on down there?
Absolutely. Today will be the final day. Yesterday, we saw quite a number of folks going through Farm Progress. And no doubt, corn sweat is real, or at least that's what we all thought, as we were not in the shade and it was hot. But it's an interesting place to go. It's not that you're not going to see equipment that you don't see in other places, but the opportunity to visit with so many folks in one spot is pretty tremendous. So think about it as the networking that goes along with it. No doubt, every equipment manufacturer wanted to introduce the latest and greatest. Klaus is talking about a brand new combine. Case had a new combine that was there to look at. There are software updates to be discussed. And just based on the number of press releases that I got with invitations to stop at booths to visit about what was new with each different company, there's a lot of information. Interesting enough, there's a large farmer cooperative in central Illinois, Indiana, et cetera, by the name of Landus, L-A-N-D-U-S. Landus has grown tremendously. They've got well over 50 different retail locations now. One of the things that they introduced is health insurance for their farmers. So if you do business with them and you're a member of their cooperative and you are interested in health insurance for your family, they would be an option for you to buy into their program. Something that's new and different and trying to bring more opportunities to rural areas where folks may not have all of those same their health insurance. So that was one thing that folks wanted to stop and see. Lots of drones, because we all know that drone spraying acres went up tremendously in 2024. We'll probably continue to see that rise over the next few years. So if there were things that you wanted to look at, they were likely right there. Plenty of stuff to stop and see and do, lots of ride and drives. Kubota was showing off some new UTVs. Both Chevy and Ford had things there, as well as all the equipment manufacturers. If you wanted to test drive a combine, you certainly could. They even had corn planted for you to run out there and harvest.
And Bridget, really? Most importantly, out of everything that happened down there,
yeah.
The million-dollar question, did you get my autograph that I was asking?
I did, but it's going to come at a little bit of a twisting.
Uh-oh.
So when I get back into studio, we'll have to talk about that. So the folks over at Farm Rescue gave me a great Farm Rescue Busch Light cap, because Busch Light does quite a bit of promotion with their corn cans for
right.
farmers. Remember, the profits that come off those corn cans go back to farmers through Farm Rescue. And so they do a great promotion with them. They had some great caps. I did get one signed by one of our former guests. That was Quick Dick McDick. He was at the Mandeco booth, like he was at Big Iron last year. But we might be able to do something even bigger and better with that hat, Dean. So
hey,
we're going to talk about that when I get back.
Excellent. Good deal. Good deal.
Yeah.
Love it.
Everything good for Farm Rescue. So
right.
Yeah, lots of good opportunities.
Right on. Good stuff there, B. And if you want to join in our conversation today, we're going to have Philip Panek on with us. He's farming out in western New York. We'll be touching on not just corn and beans, but also sweet corn and green beans and whatever else that Philip's got going on over there. And if you have questions for him or us, feel free to call us. 701-293-9000. Again, that number is 701-293-9000. Or emails to the program, that's weather or ag@flagfamily.com. We'll get caught up with the American Ag Network, and we'll be right back.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thank you for joining all of us today. Big thank you to Red River Retention Authority. They've been rehabilitating a lot of dams, especially on the Elm River. And boy, after some of the rainfall in western Cass County, Steele County, et cetera, yesterday, we may need more of their help as we get those dams up to speed. So thanks to River Retention Authority for that and for the work that they've done with our Here We Grow project. And also to Gowan. Gowan brought us a fungicide to make sure that we have the best bushels possible off of our corn crop, off of our custom farming project of 20 acres of corn, where once again, those profits are going to be going to Farm Rescue at the end of this season. Joining us today is a farmer from western New York. First of all, Philip and I have never met in person, but he was recommended to me through some mutual friends who said, you should see how their operation thrives. And just the difference of comparing North Dakota to New York State has been pretty interesting in several conversations we've had. So, Philip Panek from Western New York, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic. So tell me a little bit more, especially for those who have not heard your story. Where do you farm? Tell me a little bit about what's going on around you as far as your geography, your soils, that type of thing.
Yeah, we're in western New York. We're right in the middle of Rochester and Buffalo, pretty close to Lake Ontario, about 30 acres, very diverse, you know, from sand to clay, as far as those go. Lots of rocks. Seems like we have lots of those everywhere. And really just a family farm.
Hey, Philip, can I interrupt you here for a second?
Yeah, what's up?
Sorry, we're getting a really bad signal coming in your way. Is there any way we can switch this to just phone? Bridge, I don't know if you have a quick contact with them. We can share that number or not with Philip, but we're not getting any words legible from him right now, so we'll have to fix that connection.
No problem. I am sending that 701-293-9000 number to Philip as we speak.
Awesome. Yeah, let's just switch to that. And while we wait here for a quick moment, Dean, could we just get a quick rundown on the forecast for today?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got some cloudy skies throughout much of the area right now. Still a few showers and thunderstorms on radar, mainly stretching into Lakes Country, let's say from east of DL through about Alexandria and southward. And again, those will continue to press eastward. We are seeing some breaks in the clouds coming in from the west, so we'll see improving conditions from the valley westward as we head into the afternoon. Still a chance for storms far southern Lakes Country, again, generally south of Alexandria, with temperatures remaining in the 70s today. We'll clear things out. Might see a little patchy fog in some areas tonight with lows in the low to mid-50s. And then the start of the holiday weekend, well, we'll say Friday starts it for many. We're looking at a breezy day with west winds at 10 to 25. Plenty of sunshine with highs in the upper 70s. And we're in the upper 70s to right around 80 on Saturday under partly cloudy skies. Winds will shift to the northwest about 10 to 20. And then as we head into Sunday and Monday, highs low to mid 70s on Sunday, plenty of sunshine and lighter winds. And then Monday for Labor Day, we're looking at southerly winds starting to pick up and temperatures in the upper 70s. And then we'll be in the 80s after that for next week. So quote-unquote summer warmth is not done. Looks like a pretty dry holiday forecast and a little breezy at times, with the coolest day being Sunday. But even that, we'll have light winds, so it'll still be a very nice day. A really great weekend for the last official, I guess you could call it, weekend of summer, as meteorological fall starts on Sunday. So all in all,
look at that.
Yeah, pretty decent looking forecast. We'll dry things out for those areas that got hit hard by the heavy rain, and really not much rain in sight. Maybe a chance next week, but it'll be later next week. So we'll see how that pans out.
Right on, right on.
Do we have our guest back, Bridget?
I think we have Philip back. Philip, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Perfect. Awesome. That's
yeah, that sounds good. Let's try this again, Philip. Where are you from? Where are you farming? And what's kind of going on around your general area?
Yeah, so we're from Albion, New York, which is western New York, right between Buffalo and Rochester, pretty close to Lake Ontario. We farm about a 30-mile radius in that area. Our soils range from, you know, we got a couple wet sand fields all the way to basically clay with lots of rocks in between. So farm with my family, my dad and my brother and my mom here in New York, and just enjoying this beautiful day.
So that would just be wild for me that you said you've got rocks. You're close to the lake. That is not what people necessarily think of when they think of the area in which you farm. And so you've got some specialty crops, but is that generally more than one would imagine? It's not just it's not a corn and soybean countryside. You have quite a lot and variety of crops raised around you?
Yes, we so closer to the lake, there's a lot of apples. And actually, we have the Alba Muck, which is the onion capital of the world, is about 15 minutes south of us. So there's quite a bit of diverse crops in this area besides corn and beans, vegetables, ranging from green beans, peas, we have onions, we have potatoes, peaches. I mean, it's definitely a unique area for sure.
So being so close to the lake, what does that bring you for weather? What's your rainfall like over there and snowfall, et cetera?
Snowfall, the patterns have changed a little bit. We used to get hit pretty hard off the lake, and every now and then we still do get a pretty severe thunder or a snowstorm. We're kind of in a sweet spot between Lake Erie, it misses us to the south, and Lake Ontario only hits us if it comes out of the north and blows it that direction. So a couple years ago, Buffalo got hit with tremendous amounts of snow on Christmas Day, Christmas Eve, and we didn't get anything here, but we could see the snow band south of us, and you could drive into it if you drove about 20 minutes south. So it really just depends on which way the wind's going to blow that day. But we do get quite a bit of lake effect rain and snow.
Impressive volumes, I would imagine, when you say that.
Yep. We're definitely not hurting for moisture most of the year. We started putting in drainage tile about 10 years ago, pretty heavy, to just kind of take care of those issues.
And Philip, when dealing with the lake effect snow going on over there in New York, how does that generally affect your mesoclimate over there for planting? Does that push you guys down to a later date than, say, the general surrounding area or further away from the lake where they don't quite get that much snow from lake effect?
No, we're probably ahead of the game. Just because we kind of have a little microclimate from the lake that keeps everything a little bit warmer, so we're a little bit sooner probably than the rest of the state as far north as we are, which is kind of unique.
Cool. All right. Well, we got to hit a quick break here, Philip. So we're going to get caught up with local news when we come back. I know we want to talk about crop, what you're growing and how it differs, and even how it might differ from growing the same thing here in North Dakota. So we'll get those questions answered. And if you have any questions you want to ask for us or Philip, feel free to do so on the Red Wing Shoe Line, 701-293-9000, or email weather@flagfamily.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining us 1:35 on this afternoon. Rejoining our conversation now with Philip from Western New York. He's a farmer. And Philip, over there in Western New York, what is it that you're farming and growing?
Yeah, so we grow corn, soybeans, green beans, peas, sweet corn. And then my mom does some strawberries and blueberries and some pumpkins on the side as well.
Wow. Oh, wow. You got all sorts of things going on over there. Of the things that you're growing, what is one of your favorites? What's one of your favorite crops?
Oh, corn for sure.
Why would you say that?
As far as weed management, by far it's the easiest to control and compared to vegetables. Definitely, vegetables are a little tricky in this area, trying to keep rotation. Certain sprays we can spray and not spray for 2 or 3 years rotation on them.
I see. And I know Bridget's going to have more information on this, so I'll have her hop in afterwards. But tell me the process of planting corn over there. I just kind of want to know how it differs from over in New York than here in the Red River Valley or the clay soils of North Dakota over here in eastern half of our state. What row distance are you doing, population, day corn, anything like that? You know, just the general way you're going about planting and raising corn.
Yeah, so we're on 30-inch rows for corn, anywhere from 98 to 108 day. Normally, we start May 1st. We don't like to go anywhere before May 1st. We've gotten burned a couple times planting in April, so we wait a little bit and start in May. We're about 2 weeks sooner with our tiled ground than our non-tiled neighbors or even our non-tiled rented ground, just as far as getting going, because it's a lot of times wet when we start planting, and the non-tiled ground is not, or is, I mean. So it's kind of...
So, Philip, one of the crops that you and I talked a lot about that is a little bit more complicated, if you will, versus just planting corn, and that interests me a great deal, would be the green beans that you're planting. So as someone who gardens and plants green beans, are they going to look the same? Do they resemble soybeans? You know, let folks know what that crop looks like and how you work with it.
Yeah, so it's an edible string bean. We plant them with our corn planter. We have two different types of plantings that we do. We do some before peas, and then we also do after peas, so we can kind of get a double crop on that green bean. So it's a 60-day crop. It's sprayed 3 to 4 times, for twice for weeds and once for a fungicide. But it's a very quick crop, which allows us to either do nutrient management before, you know, pH conditioning on our soils, or to do some tiling work before or after on those fields we choose.
Do you have many problems with bugs of any sort that really love to hang out in those crops as well?
Not one that brings a bell that's a severe nuisance. We do have an insecticide program that, you know, we will scout in case a bug does appear, but most of the time it's weed pressure that's kind of the big one on green beans. Sweet corn is more of the bugs, worms that get in that we have to take care of, you know, insects for that.
And Philip, you said you you're growing peas. Are they dried peas, green peas, and how do you like that crop?
So we do green peas, like that crop, because we can get it in early. That one we'll put in anywhere from the 1st of April all the way into the middle of May, depending on timing. Like that one, we don't plant those. We custom contract planting out, and harvesting goes to the local co-op. So that was a pretty nice crop as far as we just kind of spray and maintain it, and then the co-op does the rest.
Nice.
Same thing with green beans. We plant the green beans, but another crew comes and harvests them and trucks them all away.
So are they doing a mechanical harvester for that crop, for the green beans? How do they get those out of the field?
Yep, so the green beans is picked by an oxbow machine. It's got little mechanical steel fingers on it that pick up the beans and the vines, and blows the vines out, and the beans go into the hopper. And the hopper dumps into either a wagon or to the truck, and they go right to the plant from there. Whereas the pea is an oxbow machine as well that they use, but it actually is separating the shell, so it's just the pea itself that's getting dumped into the truck, not the whole pod itself. So it's a little bit more complicated for peas than for green beans.
And you mentioned that a harvest crew comes out for those. So are they slated for just a specific time of day? Like, they're going to let you know we're in these fields from only noon to 4 o'clock today, or we're waiting a week before we come back out, because it's a bit of a schedule that they're taking them into the factories?
Yeah, the whole process is of the planting schedule is all determined, and then the harvest it follows that planting schedule. So they tell us when to plant, and then they tell us when they're coming to harvest. And kind of in between is it's all what they want. They're kind of in control of that.
Pretty neat that, you know, as far as that area is concerned, we don't think about the veggie crops that are happening over there very often, but for the most part, is everything going into a canned or a frozen product? Are they going to the fresh market? What does that look like?
There are quite a bit of fresh market operations here. Ours go to those steam fresh bags or to a frozen bag. A local cannery was in this area, Seneca Foods. They pulled out and went to a different state. But all of ours go to that fresh or kind of that steam fresh bag or frozen bag.
And those are things that we don't always think about, is how did it get there? And it might just be coming from your farm, Philip, when we least expect it. So, you're close to the Erie Canal. So how long have you guys been farming up against that? You'd mentioned that sometimes you've even got to cross the canal with equipment, correct?
Yeah, so we've been farming in this area for 40 years. And equipment's just getting bigger, and the bridges going over this canal aren't any bigger. They're still the same that they were 200 years ago. So that's one of our biggest challenges for equipment is buying equipment that will fit across these two-lane bridges that are quite narrow.
All right. When you're having to cross the bridge, because we're in a pretty wide open space out here, I don't think about this nearly as often, but do you have to at times stop traffic on one side in order to get a tractor and an implement to the other? What does that look like with some of the traffic, or are you maybe not as heavy traffic area as I might envision?
Well, we're not very heavy traffic. We're still pretty rural, but we do create a lot of traffic, blockages, but we take up a lot of the road when we're going through some of these small towns that the bridges are wide enough to actually go through. Orleans County has the most bridges per county, and I think four of them are closed right now permanently because the state ran out of funding to maintain these bridges.
Wow. I think that happens in more places than we might be aware of. Can you irrigate out of that canal?
Yes, so we have 11 irrigation pivots, and 10 of our pivots are they come from the Erie Canal, not directly. One of them comes directly from the canal. All the other ones are from siphons that go into natural ditches that then travel down the creeks to our pivots farther away.
And Phil, you said you were in a pretty climate-friendly area moisture and whatnot. Do you guys ever have to deal with hail damage or severe storm damage, or do you guys mostly escape that in the summer months as well?
Well, I would say we mostly escape it, but we did have a hailstorm come in about 2 weeks ago and kind of wreaked havoc on a very small strip. We got some fields that got hit. Neighbor, fresh market guy got hit probably the worst. And then a lot of apples got damaged in this storm.
You said one of the... Go ahead, Bridget.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Justin.
You said was it you or your mom was farming or growing blueberries, was it?
So my mom has blueberries. Strawberries is her big one. She's got 6 acres of strawberries that she does a roadside stand in front of our house. And then she grows 50 acres of pumpkins as well, which we actually just started picking pumpkins yesterday.
Wow.
Wow. How large is the blueberry operation that she has?
Blueberries are very small. I mean, it's, she's maybe got 100 bushes, but people buy them out front.
Right. So what my question on that is, blueberries are so tiny and fragile. 100 plants is obviously going to be a bit more manageable than, say, an acre of blueberries. I guess I don't know how much space you need to grow them or how much land those 100 are on, but how do you go about harvesting the blueberries? Is this all done by hand, or is there a way you can mechanically harvest it? Maybe it's not feasible for a small scale like that.
For what we have, it's all hand harvested. Local U-pick comes in and do a little bit, but most of it's all hand picked by my mom and a few other people.
Okay.
That's a lot of diversity. The number of folks that you need to keep everything going, I realize it's a family operation. Think of, you all have your hands full, like literally carrying a pumpkin or physically driving a combine. It's got to be a lot of day-to-day management that's got to happen for you to keep this all operation moving smoothly.
Yep. Luckily, it's me, my dad, and my brother are in the management position here, and we have 9 full-time employees. We did get 4 H2A guys to come in to help with the pumpkin operation. Getting local help was getting very hard to find, so we had to rely on that H2A program to really keep the pumpkin operation viable.
Sure. Do your pumpkins go to a cannery, or are those all going out for the fresh market to use for Halloween, that type of thing?
Those all, 99% of them are jack-o'-lanterns, so they all go to local cities that go from there.
Way cool.
That's awesome.
What's the largest, do you try and grow, we had somebody on our show that grew these massive pumpkins. And so,
Mr. Ginger.
Yes. So how big – have you ever tried – what's the biggest pumpkin you've grown, I guess?
So we do have some giant pumpkins. We don't do a whole lot of them. They don't seem to sell as well here. We like to, you know, everybody likes that basketball size pumpkin. That's what all these warehouses want, is a basketball size. So we're trying to go for that. Some a little bit larger than that, but we've grown, you know, like a 3-foot diameter pumpkin, no problem. It's just, what are we going to do with them when we grow them?
That's true. It's not like you're putting that in the back of somebody's little car to take home for the day, right?
Yep. Which we have done before, but.
So, Philip, as you go through harvest and some of the things that you do, do you post photos of those anywhere for folks who might want to, you know, take a look at what that operation looks like while you're doing it?
Yeah, so it should be under Panic's Pumpkin Pile or Panic's Pick and Patch on either Facebook or Instagram. My sister-in-law runs that website and Facebook feed. So that one's kind of a neat, and I can try to post a link on my Twitter feed for you to share. It's a really nice farmstead, and it looks like a farm because we have a big gamble roof barn in the background. So
You've got the perfect scenic setting. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, Philip, thank you for joining us today, just kind of giving us an overview of a different part of ag in a different state, something we don't see in this region very often, and really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and do that. Very much appreciated. Thank you.
Yeah, nice to be on.
Thank you, Philip.
Appreciate it, Philip.
Have a good
one. All right, folks, we've got to run down a little bit more as far as headlines and the last check of the weather. Be right back.
And that screaming goat is for Steve, who is watching us online. Happy Thursday, Steve. We're looking at temperatures in the 70s. We're starting to see storms now redeveloping in Lakes Country from just outside of Fergus down through Elbow Lake. And those are moving northeastward, so those will be approaching areas around Perham and just east of Detroit Lakes. So, Bridget, as you drive home, you might have to deal with some stronger storms as you approach the Alex area. So keep that in mind.
Bridget, can we get some pleasant sounds of raindrops hitting your car at 65 miles per hour, please?
I'm going to have to slow down a bit for that, but sure.
Well, I was just trying to make it seem like you were doing the speed limit, but...
Thanks for that.
I know how you drive.
Appreciate it.
I'm guessing you're out of the rain by now, right?
So far, so good, yes.
Oh, there's another one coming. Just you wait.
Oh, I can see it now. See it now. There it is.
Oh, God.
Thanks much, guys.
Oh, man.
No problem.
Let's run over some ag topics real quick here, guys.
All right. Well, you know, we're not supposed to be body shaming anybody, but unfortunately in livestock, we are actually doing a body condition score. Really, it's how you evaluate their physical health with a weight to height ratio. It's somewhat similar to what we do in people, but you're going to actually use this practice to check to see if those animals are healthy enough, especially cows for reproduction. You don't want a cow that's got a low body score. She's not going to be able to carry that calf and not going to have the right physical health as well as be able to nourish that calf throughout the season afterwards. Then additionally, if you're getting cattle ready for slaughter, you've got to make sure that you're fattening them up. So you want a higher body condition score. If you're counting ribs, that's not a good point. That's a low body condition score. A little harder to do when they have their long winter hair on, but we certainly don't have to worry about that here as we're just about to September. They've been out on pasture and hopefully come back in looking sort of fat and sassy and happy as we get ready for the fall. Mm-hmm. That would be the best body condition score for all of them.
Is the woke culture or PETA like protesting any of this?
PETA protests all the time, but for those of us who are part of the other
woke
PETA, yeah, people eating tasty animals, we're very happy about it. So one thing I did see this week that's a little different in the cropping world that was down at Far Progress, Biolumic is partnering with some seed companies. They want to use a light-activated technology to improve corn productivity. So this technology uses UV light to signal rapidly activating a natural genetic expression in the plants that could improve their yield, their quality, and their performance. They're not changing the genetics. So it really doesn't act as a genetic modification or anything like that, because it's also going to make it a little bit easier to get to market. There won't be a multi-year regulatory process. So looking for access to new technologies like this to be more efficient is crucial, especially in the low market prices we've got right now. And again, it's not making any modifications to genetic code. It's simply using a trait that's already a genetic expression and focusing on it. So it's quicker to develop and a new innovation that might be useful to some of our corn growers over the next few years.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Things in the plant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's a few things you wouldn't have thought of.
No, sure wouldn't have.
And we're going to continue to raise a great crop. We've always got good bushels and yields. Frankly, we raise the cheapest, safest, most abundant food supply in the world. And so for all of us, try to make sure that that crop gets technology into it and moving as long as fast as we can. Things like this are very helpful. And again, that was from BioLumic is the name of the company.
Right on. Very cool. Very interesting. And, I think that's about going to wrap up our show for the day today. It was a fun one learning about some different veggie crops being grown over there in Western New York, something you don't really think about too often, and just how it might differ a little bit from here in the Valley, where we're doing such a larger, more, I don't want to say commercial, but on a way commercial size scale with the size of fields we got. And I appreciate Philip coming on and talking to us. We'll be back tomorrow, 1 to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Dean's got another rundown on the forecast coming up on the Jay Thomas Show that'll be coming up next after that. Until then, watch out for storms pushing into central and southern Minnesota through this afternoon and evening. We'll just see calm conditions, a little breezy here in the Valley with a little more sunshine by the end of the day. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day.